Okay. We're starting at John chapter 18 tonight. So one of the things that I wanted to announce, and I'm just going to tell you all, if you remember on Sunday morning, I mentioned Bill Simmons in the morning lesson, and I told you that we were going to be contacting him. So, yes, I did. And he and his wife, her name is Ethel Lee, they are planning on being, I asked them when they could make it up, and they said March the 14th would be perfect for them. So we're going to be having Bill and his wife here for our Sunday service. We'll keep our classes just the way they always are. We want to continue our education and make sure that there's no chinks in that part of our class or study. But then he'll have the morning sermon and he'll have the evening sermon on March the 14th. So Sister Donna told me that he's going to be staying over at the Sister Dot Pavilion. Yeah, the Sister Dot Motel. They're just going to come up on Saturday and they'll leave on Sunday night. So, yeah, he'll be doing both lessons on Sunday. Yes, and so if you've never seen what he's done, right out on the bulletin board, we've kept I think about a year's worth of reports, so that you can kind of keep up with what he's done. And this is, in a way, this is the kind of things that we have done vicariously. So we weren't literally in Madison, Florida, but nevertheless, preaching in Madison, Florida. He's been up here before, and he's preached at Lula, Georgia, and he's preached here before, yes. So, but he's one of the men that we've supported, and so we're it'd be good for us all to have a chance to meet him, and hopefully we'll try to figure out something to maybe on Sunday afternoon to all come together and maybe do some type of a get together or a meeting. All right, John chapter 18. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Cedron, where a garden was in which he had entered with his disciples. This is what we talked about. I mean, we covered this briefly, and I'm just doing a little review from what Daryl led us. But the idea with it is after he spoke those things in chapter 17, that prayer, all right, now this is where they have left. In the Bible and other passages and other the accounts, one of them says, and then they sang a hymn, and then they went out, all right? And so after this that he spoke, now they had already gone out, and then they had already been in the garden, and Jesus had prayed, that the three times about the cup passing from me, and so the idea with it is that all that had transpired, and now we come into Judas, who knew the place, because the Bible says that they must have went there a lot. All right, that was kind of like a favorite place to go. Judas knew exactly where he would be, and that's why he led these people out. And so he received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, and they came after with lanterns, torches, and weapons. Can you sneak up on anybody with lanterns, torches, and weapons? No. And so the noise that these guys must have made, I mean, really, Jesus would have had plenty of opportunity, if he wished, just to bail. And they couldn't have found him. I mean, he did. He had all those opportunities. Now, maybe everybody else was sleeping, but I tell you what, I don't know if I could sleep through all that stuff, all that commotion is coming up. And I'm sure everybody's not on what they call radio silence. So they may be speaking amongst themselves or talking, and so that all adds to the extra noise, plus the armor and everything else, which makes a lot of clanging and jangling. So there again, we had people here in what you would call attack mode, don't you think? They were out to catch a bad guy. At least that's the way they were dressed, all right? I don't know if anybody saw as a fan of any of those old black and white sci-fi movies, but does anybody know what happens when they came out to go after, when the townspeople went out to go get Frankenstein or some of those things, you know, they're out there by night with all that stuff. That's the picture I have in my mind, okay? And now it may not be an accurate picture of what happened here, but that's the picture that I have. These people are out there, they're coming as if they were going to be fighting some battle. But what were they doing? They were coming out to catch an unarmed man who had no sword or any other way to defend himself. And what evil had this man done? None. All right. Did he ever do anything that would scare anybody or that would threaten anybody? Well, maybe he healed a few people. I don't know how that would scare anybody. Or he taught people about what the kingdom was like. And I doubt if that scared anybody. Now, it's possible that the people who were scared of Jesus' teaching was the scribes and Pharisees, because they were upset about the things that he was teaching. Okay, yeah, that doesn't bother me, but it might bother some of y'all. Thanks, Daryl. All right, so here we go. We have Jesus now out there. And so Judas received a band of men, and they came with all the lanterns and torches and weapons. And Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said to them. Now you get that? Did Jesus run away? He went to that group. All right? And so, who are you looking for? Whom do you seek? And they answered, Jesus of Nazareth. I'm using that kind of tone of voice right now, okay? Because, you know, they're on a mission. We're coming after this Jesus guy. And Jesus says, oh, you got him. Here I am. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. And as soon as he had said to them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. Now, I think that would be, in my way of seeing this whole thing, I mean, these people were in attack mode, and they were coming this way, right? And when Jesus says, I am he, that... Whoa. And when the first person trips against the other person who trips against the other person, what you have is that domino thing. And can you imagine, and again, maybe the theater of the mind is a lot more, there's a lot more detail in the theater of the mind. But I see these guys all scattered on the ground, and it's almost comical. Roger? Yeah. And go ahead, repeat that, Jason, for the...
They knew what he was capable of. They knew who he was.
Yes.
That's what blows my mind. Is they knew who he was, and they knew what he was capable of.
And coming to death anyway. Uh-huh. And it wasn't the cowards who were back in Jerusalem sending these bunch of people out there. It was this... renegade, this group, this band, but I don't really see any chief priests or Pharisees or anybody else in this crowd right here. They were still back in Jerusalem because, see, now that's called plausible deniability. If something happened to him, we don't know what happened to him. I mean, you understand how that works? So they asked them again, who are you seeking? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And this time I think that maybe the tone that they said it was just a little bit different than the first time. And he says, I've told you, I am he. If you seek me, then let these go their way. In the New King James Version, it also says, let these go their way. Who are the these that he's talking about in this context? His disciples, all right? Once again, he says, here, take me, leave these guys alone. If you remember, that was one of the things he says he's protecting them. That was one of the things he was talking about, that they've not lost any of them. Now, except for Judas, who is going to be lost. That the saying might be fulfilled, which he spake of them, which you gave me, have I lost none. So they have all kept their life. They all were alive.
He had lost.
Yes. And
Jesus could have come back.
Yes, he could have come back. And so he really wasn't lost. I mean, when you talk about lost, I mean, hanging yourself, I think, pretty much solidifies the lost part on Judas's part. But you're right. Judas had every opportunity to repent and to come back and to ask his brothers for forgiveness. Can you imagine what Peter had to say to his brothers when it was revealed? According to John's writing here, John was part of that, heard a lot of that conversation. So John was a witness to Peter saying, basically, as God is my witness, I've never seen the guy before. Because that's what it means to swear. To swear by using God is, I swear to God. Mm-hmm. That's it.
I mean, when it all boils down to it, you could have, what have you done?
Wept bitterly.
Asked God for forgiveness.
And if, we'll play the what if game, and if Judas had not hanged himself, and if he would have found the courage to be with his brothers one more time, which probably they may have hung him. I mean, knowing the brothers of wrath, I mean, you know, James and John were the Boanerges. But all those what ifs, let's put them in place. Jesus would have. Did Jesus ever? There's no word there where Jesus tells Peter, well. Yeah. Yeah, there's no I told you so's with Jesus. And he could have said that to everybody else too. You all ran away.
But what a great
example. Mm-hmm. Figure when Jesus said, Father, forgive them for they know not what they do, Peter and Judas and everybody else is included in that for they know not what they do. So once again, the forgiveness of Jesus is just mind-blowing. The things that they, the things that was hurled at him, the insults and all the everything else, it's just mind-blowingly, not mind-blowing. And so, so Peter, though, true to his word, what he said at the supper, even if I have to die with you, I'll die before I betray you. All right. And so he's the one who drew a sword and he cut off Malchus's ear. All right? And if you're carrying a sword, and when you're swinging it one way, an ear means he missed. More than likely, he was aiming for his head. And so Malchus dodges it. And somehow, when he dodges it, I mean, he missed the rest of his body, too, and only got his ear. So Peter, though, was willing to die. He thought, okay, I'm going to defend Jesus. I'm going to be here for him. And he did it probably without thinking. It was almost instinctive. I'm told that there's people who have done things like this when there was battle going on, where you hear the stories of the grenade being thrown into a trench and somebody doesn't look for any other reason but others. He just throws himself on the grenade and takes the brunt of it. He was willing to die for the rest of his brothers. Well, Peter may have had that. I mean, it may have been an instinctive thing for him to try to fight. But Jesus tells him, put it up. Put up your sword, he says in verse 11. If he has the cup which my Father has given me, shall I not drink it? Now, this is the last thing that we talked about on Sunday morning. The cup which my Father has given me. It was Peter, James, and John who went a little bit farther with Jesus while Jesus went in the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. And what did Jesus say three times? This cup pass from me. All right? So that cup that he was talking about, Peter had to have understood exactly what he meant by this cup. All right? Then the band and the captains and the officers of the Jews took Jesus and bound him. And really, why would they even bound him? He would have just walked with them. But that's what you do to prisoners. You tie him up as if he could not just throw those things off. And if you remember, when these people took him to throw him off the edge of the cliff at his hometown, what did he do? Just turn around and just walk straight through them, all right? And nobody could touch him, all right? So those ropes didn't really bind him. You know what bound him? His love for us. Yeah, but his love for us and the sacrifice he was going to make. And so, yes, he allowed those the bonds to stay on him. Okay, and led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law to Caiaphas, which was the high priest that same year. Now Caiaphas was he which gave counsel to the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. All right? Chapter 11, verse 50 says the very same thing. Right? This is just basically repeating what Caiaphas has already said. Somebody's going to die. All right? And in the way that the priests and the Pharisees were looking at it is if Jesus was allowed to continue, they and the nation that they knew was no longer going to be in existence. All right? So that was the end of their world. And so before the world would end, somebody's got to die. And it's got to be him. Simon Peter followed Jesus in verse 15, and so did another disciple. Now, once again, who do you suppose this other disciple was? You know, everything points to John, all right? Who is the disciple that Jesus loved? John. John had a really hard time naming himself, all right? But once again, so Peter followed, and so did John. This is the first time this was ever recorded, all right? Matthew, Mark, and Luke say nothing about this, all right? But again, if John went with him, was he not an eyewitness to these things that happened? Okay. And that disciple was known unto the high priest. Some people could have said, well, yeah, that was Judas. And so that is a viable, you know, that is a, because it was a disciple of Jesus, Judas was still a disciple as well. So let's not discount. And we're not going to argue about, well, no, it was John, it was Judas. No, it was a disciple, all right, who was known to the high priest. And, well, we do know that Judas was known to the high priest. Very possible that John was known to the high priest too. But we don't know. I mean, all we know is what's recorded here. And he went in with Jesus into the palace of the high priest. But Peter stood at the door without. Then went out to that other disciple, which was known to the high priest, and spoke unto her that kept the door, and brought in Peter. All right? Now, again, do you think this would have been Judas? If he was the one who betrayed Jesus, that Peter was saying, hey, Judas, let me in. So you understand the argument that the disciple was Judas, I think it falls down on this verse right there. Buck?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And so that he spoke to her that kept the door and brought in Peter, and said to the damsel that kept the door unto Peter, are you not also one of this man's disciples? And what did Peter say? I am not. All right? Now, there's a whole lot of reasons why he said what he said. And regardless of the reasons, you could say there's a mitigating circumstance of why he did what he did. But once again, Jesus already understood what was going to happen. And he understood and even told Peter that he was going to deny him three times. All right? So, I am not. No, I'm not. Okay. And the servants and officers stood there, who had made a fire of coals, for it was cold, and Peter stood with them and warmed himself. Now here again, he's standing in the same fire and warming himself with the servants and officers. And those servants and officers, usually unless they're working overtime for some special shift, these servants and officers were probably the same ones who brought him in. All right? It doesn't say specifically. I mean, that's just a probability. So I don't want to say this is doctrine, but it just, but they warmed themselves and Peter was standing with them. You see, sometimes when you're cold, you'll make friends with people who have a fire for you to warm yourself with. So he warmed himself. The high priest then asked Jesus of his disciples and of his doctrine. And Jesus answered him, I spoke openly to the world. I ever taught in the synagogue and in the temple and where the Jews always came to or resort. And in secret I have said nothing. So why do you ask me? Ask them who heard me. They know what I said. All right. Why did Jesus have to say anything on his defense? You understand that there are people who heard him all the time. And guess who was in that? Guess who was in the presence now when this was happening? John and Peter. Ask them. Could he just say, ask them? I came, I spoke openly, I taught openly, and everybody heard me, everybody saw me. And so, don't ask me, ask them. They know what I said. And officers which stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, why are you, in other words, show some respect. Answerest thou the high priest so? That's what it says in the King James Version. All right? So, a little slap across the back, across the face with the back of your hand. So insubordinate. Do you suppose Jesus is being insubordinate here? Was he all about not telling the truth? All right? And Jesus answered him, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of the evil, but if well, why do you strike me? So now he's talking to the other person who just struck him. Hey, what evil was said? If I've done something evil, okay, but tell me what it is I said was wrong. He was telling the truth. Okay. Now, do we have any questions or comments so far? Nothing. Anybody want to have anything that? Some of these proceedings remind me of a song that was back in the 70s about the night the lights went out in Georgia. Well, this was the night the lights went out in Jerusalem. All right. It was a kangaroo court, and the verdict was already there. Okay, he's guilty. Makes no difference what anybody says, what anybody does, he's guilty. All right, so it was a foregone conclusion, I remember hearing, I forget, it was in a gospel meeting one time, and it was a person who was actually a trial lawyer, and he went over this whole thing, and do you understand that even our judicial system is based upon the same type of judicial system that they had back then? And yes, a lawyer or a defendant was hired to speak for you. Where was Jesus' public defender? Yeah, he was in bed. It was in the middle of the night. All right, but there was Jesus had no public defender. But it was, Roman law. I believe him. Now, Jason, you said Roman law even dictated that there should be someone to speak in a person's defense. That person doesn't have to speak for his own. There's some. Two witnesses. Right. But once again, Roman law and also God's law actually have a lot in common about. Yes.
Yeah.
No, not yet.
The Jews have already made up their mind.
Uh-huh.
The Rome had something else in mind, right?
Yes.
I mean, when we get to it, Pilate's going to say,
Yeah, because even Pilate even looked at these petty Jews who are trying to make up all these accusations. And I know that there has been some comedy sketches where they were, you know, that they were going to bring somebody and they were going to burn him as a witch, and they would give up, they make all these silly accusations. But the idea with it is that if it weren't so tragic, it would be comical. The things that they brought up to Pilate about Jesus.
Roger brings up another good point. It was done in the middle of the night for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
So that people,
right.
The people were asleep. The people didn't know this.
Yeah, and if the light of day were allowed to come through here, the other people could have come forward and then give. Yeah, probably early morning. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was sunrise.
Or.
And then obviously Jesus had they pretty much kept Jesus on a real short chain here because they weren't wanting him to be out in public either. Okay, so anything else there? Because we're going to go to verse 24 then. Okay. Now Annas had sent him bound unto Caiaphas the high priest, and Simon Peter stood and warmed himself, and they said to him, "Are you not one of his disciples?" And he denied it and said, "I am not." That's strike two. One of the servants of the high priest, being his kinsman, whose ear Peter cut off, said, "Did I not see you in the garden with him?" Now, there you go. You can't. I think I could remember the face of the person who just cut off my ear. I really believe that picture of that person's face would forever be indelibly etched into my mind. All right? So this wasn't just somebody who just said, "Oh, well, I think you are," or "your speech betrays you," because other places say he was a Galilean because of his speech. This person says, "Did I not see you in the garden with him? You're the dude that cut off my ear." And Peter denied, and immediately the cock crew. Now, there's other passages to talk about what Peter did. It says he cursed and swore. You know, cursing is wishing ill on somebody. You know, wishing someone to burn in hell forever, that's a curse. All right? Swearing, though, one of the things why we're told not to swear is because we're not to swear by anything or even by God, you know. But, you know, again, when someone says, "I swear to God," that's true. If they have to use God as their, as the way they have to try to prove they're telling the truth, they're a compulsive liar to begin with. Once again, immediately the cock crew. And so what happened after that, John does not record. But what did happen after the cock crew, the rooster crowed? Jesus looked at Peter. He made that eye contact. And can you imagine the look of disappointment maybe in his face, or the sadness? And maybe it's just because, you know, it says he is swearing and cursing once again. Now, I don't know, some of you mothers may have been able to use that. "I'm so disappointed in you." Kids just melt. Anything but having mom say, "I'm so disappointed in you." Okay, or your dad saying, "I'm so disappointed." I mean, really, that will melt you. And then again, there's also, I don't know how you ladies do it, but there's that look that you have that you can stop your kids right in their tracks, okay? And well, I mean, sometimes dads get that look, but the moms are good at that. I mean, I think they practice in the mirror. Oh, yeah.
You know, Bill, I kind of think that maybe if I look at
surprise. Oh, yeah, I told you so.
Not like, not even an "I told you so."
Yeah, but.
Peter, what I said.
Yeah.
Don't question.
Yeah, whatever happened, you know, when they made that eye contact, volumes of words and thoughts and emotions just probably went flying back and forth. Yes, and the King James Version says, you said return, the King James Version says, and when you're converted, which is the same idea, all right? And obviously we understand that Peter grew a backbone because in the book of Acts, he was willing to stand up to the very same people who are putting Jesus to death here.
His role changed.
Yes. Way, yeah. Mm-hmm. He went out and he wept bitterly. Well, when you're tired and you're not surrounded by people who for any support. Yeah, you're on your own, Roger. And a lot of things that we find in here are not recorded about the trial. You know, where after some questioning. That Caiaphas ripped his clothing and said, "We don't need to hear any more. This is blasphemy." And he ripped his clothing and so that was it. And that basically ended the trial, as it were, or the arraignment, I guess, if you want to call it. But the idea is that they led Jesus away. So it says, then they led Jesus away from Caiaphas into the hall of judgment. And it was early, and they themselves went not into the judgment hall, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Now, remember, we got to do the good religious stuff here. You know, we have to eat the Passover. We have to do all this type of all this religious stuff. Oh yeah, we're going to kill somebody. We're going to lie, and we're going to send this man to a crucifixion. But we're religious, and we're going to do the religious stuff. And so we want to make sure we get back at home enough time to put on our religious garbs and look real pious in front of everybody else. Okay. Mike? And so, I mean, it would really have been nice if all these four writers would have just said, okay, let's put it all together now. But again, John is writing well after, possibly 30 years had passed from the time that the gospel. See, well, Mark's was the first gospel that went through. Matthew was the second, followed by Luke, and then followed by John. Okay, that's the chronology of how the gospels that were recorded. And so John is writing well behind all the others. And so there's a lot of things that John doesn't have to write down simply because these are well-known stories. All three of the Gospels are well-known and have been passed around already. So now John is filling in some of the other gaps to which he was an eyewitness to. So once again, but the things that we can read about in here actually fleshes it out a little bit more. It gives you a better detail. Go ahead.
Back to the setting up. Jesus basically every time he criticized the Pharisees for the fact that they were support the laws of man instead of the laws of God. Seeing them do that, when we read it here, it's kind of shocking. And then you step back and think about it, by the way.
Yeah. Yes. So once again, we're now coming from them. Now we're going to transfer our focus over to Pilate. Now I believe that's probably where you're going to have to pick up most of this. But they took him over to Pilate, and Pilate went out unto them and says, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" And answered and said unto him, "If he were not a malefactor, we wouldn't have brought him to you." Okay. So what's the charge? Well, if he weren't guilty, we wouldn't have brought him to you. Well, what's his charge? But he's guilty. Well, what's his charge? I mean, they couldn't, you know, I mean. Yeah, and he was looking for Roman law being broken. Yes. This is an internal affair. I don't want to have anything to do with you Jew people. Yeah.
Jewish area, that was all troubled area for that's why, like, he was, when they all asked for Barabbas.
Who was a true insurrectionist?
Instead of Jesus, who basically had that.
Yeah, and even if. And even if Pilate just thought, well, this is silly, you know, and here's this guy claiming to be a king. Okay, you're a king. I mean, you know, and of course, we're going to get into the, there's all places where Pilate says, and what is truth, right? You know, I'm telling you the truth. Well, what is truth? And I'm sure that the whole thing was a sham in Pilate's eyes. And then, of course, later on, we even know that Pilate's wife says, hey, don't have anything to do with this. I mean, just get away from this. And so, if anything else, if he should have listened to his wife. If anything else, he should listen to his wife. But once again, this just shows the complete upside down justice. There is absolutely, absolutely no justice in this whole scene. This was a travesty of justice from the Jewish law and from Roman law. Yeah, I mean, I know that we haven't, we understand that. What did Pilate do to Jesus because he was innocent? You remember what Pilate did to him? He flogged him. He scourged him almost to the point of death. That's the way you treat innocent men. That's the way you treat an innocent guy. He's not innocent. Go beat him up. I mean, you know that. Yeah, he was trying to appease the Jews. Is what he was trying to do. He was trying to make friends by kind of, well, politicians will do that. You know, they'll do or say whatever it takes to get the job done. You know, and so if we have to look the other way for some things, okay, we'll look the other way. So there again, so Pilate said unto them, "You take him and judge him according to your law." The Jews therefore said unto him, "It's not lawful for us to put any man to death." All right. Talk about technicalities. How many times has the Jews taken people and stoned them to death inside the city? Multiple times. Okay? Because Pilate even says, "Hey, you've got your law. You handle it." But this time, they didn't want to, and I believe that's where Andy was coming on his talk on Sunday morning, where when some people says, "Well, the Jews are trying to say, well, you're trying to blame us for killing Jesus."